Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and Travelers Down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway, coming to you as part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network and powered by largemanappears.com. It's me, your comeback kid, Dave Ryan, and I am joined, as always, by my faithful co-host, the also returning Stagger Lee Malone. Lee, how are you, buddy? Happening.
Can you not hear it?
This is turning into fucking Lanza-grade audio now. You're playing music on the phone that your mic's not picking up.
Oh no.
Oh wait, oh no, oh, I hear it. Oh, I hear it now. Yeah, there we go.
You ruined my bit.
Sorry, it's Brood Lee is here.
Brood Lee is here. Not just Lee, it's Brood Lee.
How have you been?
Broody.
Broody, yeah.
I hate to inform you, Dave, but I've gone to that place.
You've gone to that place.
I've gone to that place.
I mean, that's why we didn't record last week. Because you were in that place.
I was in that place.
It's a hell of a fucking commute to that place.
I mean, Beth Phoenix was in the door, or the room next door. It was quite the journey.
Yeah. Yeah, that place doesn't have Wi-Fi.
I sadly too had to watch the Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah. Oh, God.
The best news, of course, is that they cut it short.
Yeah, yeah. So, I did tweet that out of the account. I suppose let's just launch into it because this is like, it's only a few days removed, so we're not as like completely outdated as we normally are. But this is like our only juncture to talk about Mania weekend. And yeah, the Hell in a Cell. I tweeted out when it happened that like I could feel without having talked to you. The utter vindication of Edge stinking the joint out again.
Oh, it felt good. It really did. That fucking absolute sham of a man.
I was nearly in tears laughing at one, them writing Brood Edge on the Tron, but also like the removal of anything to do with the brood apart from the word brood. No, the music is the one part that undeniably was over. They got rid of that. He wasn't in the gear. Fuck that. Mirrorball suit.
Yeah, there was no music. There was no shades.
Yeah.
There was no long hair.
Yeah. I mean, like I could have done without the shades. That's fine.
There was no viscous red liquid.
The shades now, like older Edge coming out with the shades as he was last year, is very like it's less cool young guy and more dad gets headaches.
Maybe I relate to that as a dad who gets headaches.
Yeah,
that's the one thing. Yeah, Adam has gone for him. But yeah, my God, Brood Edge and the Demon in a my God, it was fucking awful. Just bad. I felt bad for Finn.
I felt bad for him, but I also was just like, Jesus, he's completely lost sight of... what I mean, like, that demon character has never really been, like, my bugbear with him was always that, like, he'd come out in the demon gear and then wrestle exactly like Finn Balor. Mm-hmm. Didn't change it up at all. But I think it reached a particularly cringy level this time when he had, like, his
flares,
his face and graphic on his back.
Yeah.
And as if we weren't going to... It's like when, you know, Undertaker would do his big ostentatious WrestleMania entrance and then a graphic would come up saying it was The Undertaker, which is like the most redundant thing in the world. It's like, oh, who else the fuck is it going to be? Like,
well, I mean, we should say that Edge showed up in his 1999 form, and true to form, Finn also showed up in his 99 form with smoking flares and paint all over his face, so...
Yeah, yeah. I feel bad for him that, like, it's like... Two huge matches in his career have been, like, interrupted and the momentum killed by a blood stoppage. So there was that where, like, it completely, whatever mystique the demon might have had to younger fans was gone by the demon requires medical attention line. But I remember I was in the building in Dallas when he had that match with Joe, which was going great, and he got cut open and they stopped it.
And everybody booed,
Yeah, it was dog shit, like, because it had been great up until that.
Well, speaking of dog shit, before we get into the wider scale, what did you think of WrestleMania in general?
I really enjoyed Night 1, and I think that's been the trend since they've been doing the two-day ones. I can't remember the very first one, but I know definitely last year I thought, like, God, Saturday was a shot in the arm, and it's like, wow, this is like some of the kind of like matches and results that I really wanted to see. And then Night 2 just screeched to a fucking halt, with the exception of like one fucking incredible match, the Intercontinental title match. I thought Night 1 was a really good show. Like, I'm not on the bandwagon with people who are saying like Night 1 was the greatest WrestleMania night of all time. Not, I think that's
fucking close.
I think that's recency bias in the extreme. Like, I get bell to bell that X7 isn't like probably doesn't hold up in terms of like the quality of wrestling on some of the matches, that's for sure. But yeah, I think it's recency bias in the extreme to say something like that. And I think the way the cage match rating for it has been dipping down steadily all week bears that out.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they made all the right calls and the right matches up until the very end.
Yeah, I think Gunther retaining was really a tip off that, okay, Cody's not winning.
Yeah. because everything we had heard was that Gunther was being primed as the Cody summer opponent.
And Roman was obviously going to disappear or whatever the plan was there.
Yeah. Which I remember saying on the, we did a, for patrons, it's still up on VOD, we did a prediction stream and a pre-show stream for Mania. And I remember saying, as like, I think it's best for all involved if Roman took a few months off until the summer. Because even though, like, as Mark was pointing out, who did a very, very good job standing in your stead on the show, I said to him, I was like, Roman's all over the place. It's like, he's not like he fucking wrestles, but like, he's an overwhelming presence on all their product. Like, and I think everybody would benefit from him getting some time off.
So, like, coming out of Mania, obviously Cody fucking got embarrassed. But like, even Raw was not what's Roman doing next. It was, oh, well, here's Cody and Brock. And Roman is now back to not trusting a noose.
Yeah. And it's like, it is plain as day that it was terribly inconvenient that Sami Zayn got over.
Mm-hmm.
It was terribly inconvenient that Kevin Owens is still over.
Yeah, unbelievably so. For
yeah.
Like, the amount of shit that the two of them have had to put up with.
And Cody only got the spot because Dwayne was busy.
Yes.
And it is also, again, not to rabbit a flagship point, but I think the more time goes on, the more evident there is that, apart from Dwayne, there isn't a plan.
There isn't a plan. No, there's not.
There isn't, because you had Sammy, who was the most organically over babyface they've had since Daniel Bryan, or maybe Kofi, with the Kofi mania, you could argue, but I would say since Bryan. I'd
say Daniel Bryan,
You could have done the switch then, or you could have held it off another month and have him like take a spot in a three-way and just do the Bryan thing again with Cody. You could have done that, or you could have had this guy that you were clearly, because like he won the Rumble, he was clearly being positioned strong before his pec tear. Now, he may have been killed to death in the booking if he'd been around all last year.
I maintain that if he hadn't got that injury, he would have been a nobody come to Rumble.
Yeah. I think, I don't know nobody, but I think maybe like Intercontinental title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he was, that said, I do think he was, I think it's, if he hadn't been injured and if Dwayne was still busy, I think he was the solid B plan for if Dwayne wouldn't do Mania. Well, and he didn't, I mean, so they pulled the trigger.
I mean, Dwayne didn't do Mania. They offered it to Austin. He didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
They killed Sammy.
Yeah.
Like
And I think everybody made that thing in their head where it's like, right, okay, I'm not happy what they did to Sammy, but look, you have two guys in Sammy and Cody, and you've picked one. I just laughed, and it's because I have no emotional investment whatsoever in the product. Like, I'd be really fucking mad if I put all this time into the roller coaster or into like just someone beating Roman, and now it would seem like, it seems like a title change that has to happen at a WrestleMania. Like, I know they've done a really good job in terms of like establishing SummerSlam as like the mid-year WrestleMania. Like, mm-hmm. I think it is up to a stage now where it's its own
big deal, like, again.
It stands above the like all the other pay-per-views except Mania and maybe the Rumble, you could argue, but really the Rumble is just one match, two matches.
They've really done a good job of establishing WrestleMania as one pole and SummerSlam as the other pole. And it's
I think this reign has to end at a WrestleMania. And I think now, I don't care what anybody who is like overdosing on copium this week says, it will never... you could pick Cody or Sammy to be the ones later on to do it, and it will never be as special as the chances they had.
Don't care what they do from here, how they build them back up, they'll never match what they had in February or this month.
They will be over and they will get pops, and it's one of those things where, because WWE have run off so much of their audience, they're down pretty much to the people. Like, no one's going to hijack a show anymore. No one's going to cheer who they're supposed to boo and vice versa, except for a couple of weeks out of the year when they're in a couple of different markets. So you will get people who know they're supposed to cheer Cody winning if he wins it, or Sammy if he wins it, but it's never going to be the perfect... Like, it would have been the perfect storybook ending. Like, Sammy is the one that makes more sense for whatever you want to call this fucking bloodline story, overrated bollocks. And Cody, because of his own story and his like narrative coming into it, was also a great choice. And now it's just like, the other thing is, Dwayne wins it, like, then what?
Brings it to some fucking movie openings or something.
You've given, like, the whole idea, and this is something a lot of people lose sight of, the whole idea of that there's two aspects to it, building up a long heel world title reign. Mm-hmm. One, yes, is to establish the heel as, like, you know, one of the generation's biggest stars, which I would say that, like, in so much as you can create a big star nowadays, Roman Reigns is that for his generation, whatever that means. Like, he's not a household name in spite of what that one ridiculous tweet said this week.
He's talked about as a giant star, but nobody actually buys tickets to see him.
So, like, that's one aspect, is that you build the career, the legend of this heel. Mm. And then it's also that the face that finally beats him, you've made them.
Yes, that's the whole point.
And so you've completely wasted, like, if you go to next year in Philly and you put it on The Rock, or if you put it on The Rock at SummerSlam this year, wherever you're going to do it, if it's The Rock, you've wasted it.
Mm-hmm.
You've wasted that rub. Yes, you've made Roman a big time heel, but, like, what's that achieving? Because, like, the biggest, when you build that heel, the biggest payoff financially you're going to get is the person that finally beats him.
One of the best modern examples of a great champion being defeated is Samoa Joe in Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
For 2 years he held that title, or close enough to 2 years. He held that title, and nobody could beat him. And then Austin Aries, who had only come into the company a couple of months before, and people felt he wasn't deserving of the match or final battle.
Mm-hmm.
And he beats Joe.
Yeah.
And that established straight away. Austin Aries has been a main eventer ever since.
Yeah.
Like, that's... Yeah. And that's what it was. It was literally like, here you go. You have this awesome champion, and yet this guy knocked him off. This is the guy that, for... Like, could did the thing that nobody for the past 2 years has been capable of doing.
Yep. The other thing I would say as well is just be wary that WWE, like most wrestling companies, are not good at booking what happens after a streak ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you name it, like, anybody that's gone undefeated for any length of time in WWE, like, the follow-up is never good.
And what was the thing Corey said? I think Corey said something at the start of the match, something like, Roman Reigns has not been pinned in a match, pinned or submitted in a match since 2019.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's came back with his new teeth.
Ridiculous.
And I like that's you can't throw that away on the Rock. But look, that's Mania anyway, and we don't want to.
Hey, here's a good one. What's the best match you watched over Mania weekend? Like, eliminating the IC title match, which I thought was incredible.
Do you know what I would say? I would widen it and try and say the best thing I watched over Mania weekend, and it ties us right back into WCW nicely, was Conan's introduction at the Hall of Fame for Rey Mysterio. Say what you want, the man still got it.
I have not.
He might DM you incessantly to listen to his podcast, yeah. But he still got it.
Somebody send him this audio of Dave putting him over so he can slip into Dave's DMs.
It was great. It was like those Hall of Fames now are usually like really listless, mm-hmm. and like not enjoyable whatsoever. And he lit it up, and he really made you realize. The extent to which Rey Mysterio is like, we're literally seeing one of the greatest to ever do it.
It's amazing that, like, you have people that go into the Hall of Fame and people dismiss them or whatever, but, like, Rey Mysterio is, like, literally in our lifetimes has been one of the best wrestlers of all time.
And the fact that we still get to see him at such a high level, because he, like, again, we've said it before on the show, everyone always says it, like, even before where we are now in the WCW timeline, he was told that his knees won't stand up to him jumping off a curb.
like scary. Like, look at the different, like, by the end of his original WWE run, he was an absolute shell.
Yeah.
Like, he was done, finished. Like, this was, God, like, the early 2010s, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'd even say to the mid-2010s he was fucking washed, like.
And then he disappeared for a little while, got some magic treatment.
Yeah, and, some horse placenta, Robin Van Persie style.
And, like, he's just tacked on another, like, 5-6 years to his career.
Yeah, it's incredible. And, like, no one has or will get more out of the absolute...
carcass.
Horrific, awkward beanpole that is Dominic Mysterio. This is the peak, so enjoy it. What was your favourite thing on WrestleMania week?
Do you know what? And it was one of the first things I watched. I fucking loved. I thought it was brilliant. Shun and Mao, the 37 Kamina, or it's not said 37 Kamina, but that's how it's spelled. Versus Chris Brooks and Yoshihiko.
I have not seen that yet.
Oh, man. It was like, literally, I think it was like the first match I watched all weekend.
Your Jim Cornette match of the week, I'm sure.
Oh, it was so good.
Mm.
It was so good. I'm not a DDT guy, as evidenced by, I'm not even sure if I got the names of the guys facing Brooks and Yoshihiko correct, but...
Mark Buckledy is typing out a tweet right now.
But yeah, oh God, I thought it was brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's on the list to watch. It's on the list to
that,
watch.
That first DDT show, now, obviously I skipped through, but that the opener and the main event, well worth watching.
Shall we get on with it?
Let's.
Okay, we're back. Thunder episode 67 from Syracuse, New York, 17th of June 1999. This got a 3.0 rating, down from last week's 3.1. This is a taped Thunder after a pay-per-view with 5 matches. So you know what that means, folks. Get ready for some fucking Nitro clips.
They taped this after Nitro. Did they?
What? They taped this before the pay-per-view.
Oh, God.
Yeah. which is why no in-ring promos, no Sid on the show, because he hadn't shown up yet. Mm-hmm. No one with a championship, really.
That's right. That's correct. Yeah, they're not, the tag titles aren't anywhere when the lads come out for the... Oh, no, that's a Nitro match, actually. Yeah, why didn't they have the tag titles on Nitro?
What's fucking wild is, like, Booker T returns on this show. Oh, he's in the... God, like, theoretically in the main event, and it's like, you have him come back, like, obviously, canonically, he's come back after the pay-per-view because of when this aired, but you had him available the week before the pay-per-view, and think of some of that slop they gave us in Great American Bash, like...
Why not do his return match on the pay-per-view?
You know, and you could hype it up for a week or two, like Booker T's returning to action. People mm-hmm. would love it. Hot opener? Absolutely. Well, we'll talk about him when we get to him. Tanay talks about, and I hadn't made this connection, that the psycho has been added to the out of control madness. So you've got mm-hmm. the psycho, you've got the madness, and it's out of control-y. I don't know if you've heard. Larry, in this intro as well, talks about how much Macho wants the belt, wants it more than anything. And I thought that was a weird thing to say because, like, the whole thing, Lee, going into the pay-per-view and it, at the pay-per-view was that, like, he just wanted to destroy Nash.
Yeah,
because
he hates Nash.
If he wanted the belt more than anything, it makes him look like a colossal fucking idiot that he orchestrated a DQ finish in the world title match.
The whole thing was, Macho, your elbow is banned. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to do it anyway because I want to hurt him.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
It made no sense.
Larry is totally checked out at this point, we should say.
Yeah, I don't think he's been checked in since, like, maybe the first few episodes when he was feuding with Scott Hall. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say Tanay has a poor night, but I want to say Larry dragged him to a poor night here.
They weren't great. I have to say, like, obviously we haven't watched an episode in a while.
Yeah.
And I hear Tanay open the show. I was like, oh yeah, fuck, I forgot Tanay is the color commentator, the lead commentator now. And then I went, oh yeah, that means Larry is the color guy now. I was like,
Also, and we'll get to it when we talk more Nitro, because there are extensive pieces of Nitro on this show. There's been a change up on Nitro where Bischoff is just back on commentary now.
I'm into it.
And he's, you know, that's the thing is that he doesn't, at least in the clips we saw, doesn't seem to be like smarmy heel Bischoff.
He's the tour chair.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, again, it's better than Larry doing double duty.
In my head canon, it's because Shivani and Heenan have such a shit relationship now that Bischoff has to be on the air to keep them on track.
As a literal buffer between the two of them. Yeah, possibly. We go straight to a match for once, and it's the West Texas Rednecks of Kurt Hennig and Big Bob Cum versus the Texas Hangman, Texas Hangman 1 and Texas Hangman 2.
Never identified as which. They're just one of the Hangmen.
Yeah, they're not like the Vianos, which we extensively spoke about on, I think, our last show, where they have the indicating marks on their tights. Nope.
Well, not to you. They're all the same, obviously.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So do you think the Texas Hangmen are any relation to the Virginia Hangman?
Yes. Well, their surname is Hangman. Distant
cousins, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. They come from the family. They're not Hangmen. That's a popular misconception, is that they're from the family.
But the first man, Hangmans.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, they didn't like execute people. They were just, you know, doing fairly well for themselves.
They're really good at spelling words.
Yeah, the Texas Hangmen. I will say their gear is looking like it was cinched in about 5% this time, so it wasn't like, it's still shit.
Yeah,
like. But it's not quite as baggy as it was on the last one. And I think they've changed their masks, haven't they? The masks have been upgraded.
They look slightly different already, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the masks look a bit better. Either the gear's a bit tighter or they're a bit fatter. I don't know. Who's to say?
Could have went either way.
Yeah, but, like, still a very much, like, there is absolutely no hope that anyone in this crowd are buying anyone else winning this match apart from the West Texas Rednecks. Let's talk for a second about this Syracuse crowd.
Yes, let's.
This is one of the I don't remember it being this bad on Thunder 66. I think, to Syracuse's credit, I will say this is largely WCW's fault, but I have never in the whole run of this program seen a deader crowd.
Yeah, and like, this is probably the worst instance we've seen of empty chairs on the hard camera.
Yeah.
A lot of people were gone.
this was genuinely like shockingly poor in terms of crowd reaction, because even on shows we've watched where like the action is shit and you have no star names or anything like that, people still pop for like entrances and finishers and sometimes for like promo segments and stuff like this. But like, I mean, with the exception of Booker T, maybe.
And even he got a very muted reception.
Yeah, they were given nothing. And it wasn't like, so if this was a one-off and we hadn't just seen a Thunder from here, I'd be like, okay, maybe like it's a badly mic'd crowd or something like that. But one, this wasn't the case on Thunder 66. And two, we can visibly see the crowd not giving a shit. Yeah, like the people who are there.
Like, it's a good thing they don't have phones, because literally the whole crowd would have been like down looking at their phones.
Yeah. And they definitely, like, this is one of those, I often wonder when we watch the taped ones, is like, oh, were these matches that were like put at the start of the taping? Were they put at the end of the taping? There is no mistaking that this was, they had already easily sat through two plus hours.
Yeah,
this was like, this is one where like, if I look back at the quality of like, if I'm WCW and I looked at the quality of action on this taping and I looked at the way the crowd was, I'd genuinely be considering like airing a best of. Like, this does
well, I mean, they kind of did.
yeah, truly. The way the crowd were and like how bad the show was did absolutely no one any favors. I don't think. It was very disappointing.
Now, I will say, the action they got throughout the whole show really didn't deserve much of a reaction.
No, that's again, it's like, it's WCW, it's hardly like they came out and they fucking knocked it out of the park to silence. Like, putting on a pay-per-view quality card and just getting nothing off this crowd who were sitting on their hands. No, like, they delivered bad and they got bad back in return. So I only have limited sympathy. There's like there's a brief moment like at the start of this match where Hennig and Texas Hangman number one decide they're going to do some holds and some wrestling exchanges, and it's not bad for like a minute or two, and then Big Bob comes in, and I actually thought that this was going to end in about like 90 seconds, because as soon as he comes in, like, he just starts slugging away at both of the Hangmen, and I thought, okay, like, they're already building to the finish here. So Hangman cut him off in the corner and then start choking Duncan with a bull rope. And that's like where I started. And I tweeted something out about this where I was just like, Lee, who are the heels in this match?
Yeah, that's kind of my big takeaway on this. Like, the West Texas Rednecks are being kind of presented as faces.
Yeah, even though in their feud with Conan and Ray are definitely faces.
Yeah, but they're not exactly, the Rednecks aren't exactly heels to the WCW crowd. Mm. And that's an issue. Like, I know it's a wider issue with this feud anyway, considering where a lot of the WCW, you know, events take place.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like, it's very much that Henning and Duncan are the faces here.
Are Henning and Nash boys?
I don't know.
I don't know what the relationship is there.
I don't know.
Just because that was like something that was in the back of my head. Is it a thing where they're being kind of portrayed as baby faces because him and Nash are tight and Nash still has the book? I don't know. Like, it's purely speculation on my part. And it doesn't help that, like, it frustrates me so much that, like, I think in 98, our big bugbear with the tag division was the tag titles.
Mm-hmm.
Being like disregarded, hot-shotted around, being defended by one person, being on Judy Bagwell, things like that. But now in 1999, I think the thing that's really streamed past it for me in terms of critique of the tag division is that the idea of tag psychology, they're finding new ways to break it.
Yeah.
And this was a thing where the team that are, like, I mean, like you said, they're not really being portrayed as heels, but they should be in the West Texas Rednecks, are now in a position where Bobby Duncombe is getting illegally choked out behind the referee's back by the Texas Hangmen. Who, like, I'm not saying Texas Hangmen are supposed to be these valiant baby faces in the match, but, like, they're literally supposed to be here for the heels to beat around. Yeah. They're supposed to be, like, hapless jobbers.
They should be treated as jobbers, really. Like, they're literally a lower Saturday night level team.
Yeah. So now bear that in mind, that like from that spot, that is in traditional psychology in the ring, that communicates to you that the Texas Hangmen are heels
there,
and the West Texas Rednecks mm-hmm. are baby faces. Bear that in mind, okay. Because in a couple of sentences time, that's going to be upended, but you were going to say something there.
I was just having a quick think about it. Obviously Scott Hall and Kurt Hennig would be boys going back to the AWA days.
Yes.
So I'm pretty sure obviously Nash and Hennig must have had some kind of relationship. So
that's probably safe to say. Hangman 2 telegraphs a back body drop. Oh, this was like pathetic from Bobby Duncombe. So he telegraphs a big back body drop, and Duncombe can't decide if he's going to counter it with like a kick to the midsection or a clothesline, and he kind of half-heartedly does one then the other.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's one of the most awkward, like he kind of just like caresses him with his foot and then does like one of the most awkward badly positioned clotheslines you've ever seen. Like a badly positioned clothesline to the point where I wouldn't be surprised if like you found out after the case that Bobby Duncombe like tore a muscle or something while throwing the arm, because it was just so unnatural awkward, the way he did it. Like no one with the basics of training should be doing a clothesline like that. So Hennig comes in, hits a running snapmare, throws one of the Hangmen into their corner, and now they use the bull rope to mm-hmm. choke out a Texas Hangman behind the referee's back.
Two bull ropes, one in each corner.
Yeah. And that was even like, so just in case, I should rewind to when the first bull rope swap was done. In case you were mistaken in thinking that the West Texas Rednecks were definitely baby faces, Tanay during that spot said, hey, normally these are the guys that are doing that behind the referee's back, you know, but not in a way that go, hey, it tastes their own medicine. More just like pointing out, I was like, hey, these guys are, you know, fucking dipshits as well. We get a tag. Duncombe hits a power slam, tags out again. Hennig back in, hits the Hennig plex and wins. Did you notice something interesting about the end of this match, Lee?
Was it Kurt Hennig's little bounce before he did the Hennig plex?
It was that. That was great.
I love that.
No, it was after the match, right? So their music starts playing and Hennig starts sexy dancing, which is worth looking back at, thrusting away. And the whole time the music is playing, and they actually did a little, Tanay mentioned it in their intro as well, where like the music starts playing and he goes, wait until you hear this singing start. It's unmistakably Kurt Hennig singing about how rap is crap. And it was only during them playing the music again after they won that I realized the music they were playing was not rap as crap.
No, it wasn't. It was like some generic entrance music.
It was the music the two of them had for a few weeks before rap as crap. And it didn't sound like it was dubbed over. It sounded like somebody in the booth just genuinely switched out the songs, and Tanay was so turned off he didn't realize. Because like he was really hamming up, like you were about to hear Kurt's voice any second.
Yeah, because
it just never happened.
The bit was that Larry hadn't heard it yet.
Yeah.
And they kept playing that up.
And he continued to not hear it. So then Ray and Conan run out just as they were like hog-tying one of the Hangmen. Yeah. Rough Rider on Duncombe and a face buster on Hennig. The heels bail, but in spite of the fact they were hit with two of the guy's signature moves, they're still like going up the ramp and celebrating.
True.
Not a bother on them.
True heels.
We get a flashback to the bash, or a bashback, if you will. This is Flair versus Piper, and I thought I was in my own personal circle of hell having to watch this again. You see Flair cutting a promo on Nitro after the match saying, Roddy, for 20 years we have fought, and I thought to myself, well, it sure feels like it. Flair offers Piper the vice presidency, which he accepts. Dean Malenko then came out to speak on behalf of all the young guys in the company. He says Wayne Gretzky and John Elway, they stepped aside, they passed the torch. That's class. Flair then outright refuses to pass the torch. And then Flair, Arn, and Piper beat him down. Buff makes the save, but he gets outnumbered. Saturn and Benoit then, you see, get cut off backstage by the Jersey Triad. Now, I thought, I don't want anything to do with this Flair and Piper situation. But I thought, in as much as they showed us a replay from Nitro that builds to a match that they would then later show us.
From Nitro.
I thought, yes, now also on Nitro. It would have been like the actual thing to do would have been to build to a match that they're going to have on Thunder. But at least you're seeing a peek over at Nitro that at least there's some sort of storyline progression.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I mean, That's something, isn't it, Lee?
I mean, I think the worst part of it all is, one, you have Dean Malenko to go out and do the speaking on behalf of this unit, or these young guys. And then the one that you're pushing the hardest is Buff Bagwell, who was literally in the NWO, I don't know, 3 months ago.
Yeah. WCW, everyone. Our next match was Scotty Riggs versus the Disco Inferno. And I started, I think, about 10 minutes, or not 10 minutes, sorry, felt like 10 minutes. But about 10 seconds into this match, I was in tears laughing because the bell rings and these guys do like this stalling, staring thing at each other, like genuinely like they thought they were Hogan and Rock a few years later, WrestleMania. Like they were doing a stand facing each other. Can you feel this moment?
This epic clash.
Yeah, a match that sounded like it was happening in a fucking crypt, and the two of them are just stalling with each other.
I don't know. The thing I noticed at the start of this match was Larry shitting all over all of the young talent in WCW.
So this is the main talking point that carries through pretty much all five matches on this show. Like they are talking about it all night.
Mm-hmm.
Is this thing that we picked up on last week with Larry, where, you know, they're doing the bit with Flair and with Piper where the young guys are being held down by the evil president of the company, and like that is the way that you should be seeing things. But Larry, who isn't outwardly a heel commentator at this point, but just exclusively in the context of talking about this one thing, which makes me feel like it's just a thing he believes in, says that like he doesn't think any of these young people fucking deserve it. And I was like, we're not gonna pass the torch to you. Fucking take the torch. You don't deserve it. You haven't earned it. Like absolutely burying them. And he does it over and over and over again in this show. And God bless Tanay. Like I'm sure Tanay, as probably a fan of Larry Zbysko and as somebody who is like still cutting his teeth on national television as a full-time announcer, doesn't want to be just like obstreperous with him.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want to be like, you know, really calling him out or anything like that. So he kind of just lets it all slide. Like he'll say something about how great the young guys are, and then Larry will go on for 30 seconds fucking slating them, and then tonight we're like, right, okay, and then move on.
He just does the Michael Cole thing of tag.
Yeah, and the impression you're left with as like a person who, you know, isn't inside baseball, if you're just watching this show, the way that dynamic works out is like Tanay goes, these young guys are good, and like then Zbysko like categorically
just
shuts down the idea that these young people are good. So the impression you're left with is like, oh, these young people must be fucking dog shit.
Yeah.
And if they're saying this and you're watching a Scotty Riggs versus Disco Inferno match, you're thinking this Larry guy has a fucking point.
And Larry repeatedly, many, many times, puts himself on the same level as Flair and Piper.
Yeah. Yeah. Always working. Mm-hmm. Always working. One thing I will say, and it is, you know, only occasionally that I will say it. I feel like Disco was trying.
Yeah.
I feel like he was actually trying to have a decent match here.
I think at this point in his run, he is legitimately trying to not to reuse the same word again, but legitimize his character as a wrestler.
The problem with this is, one, he's not that good.
No.
And two, Scotty Riggs is so awful, it would take somebody twice the wrestler of him to carry, and maybe more, to carry Scotty Riggs to a compelling TV match.
And also, his name is still Disco Inferno.
Yeah. And this is the thing, like you said, there is this while in 1999 where he's trying to like go legit, for want of a better term. But like by the end of this year, and it may not even be as late as the end of the year, like he's realized that that is a sunk cost and just goes way the other way.
Oh, he totally leans into the angle at the end of the year. And it's great. Don't get me wrong. Like I love the stuff that happens with Disco and the Mamelukes. I love all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a really bad match. Riggs is as bad as Riggs is selling, he is fucking awesome. On offense.
My God. Like, totally no fire, nothing at all to anything he did in this match.
And almost to Disco's credit, you can tell that, like, he's not even going to give Riggs the courtesy of, like, a full valiant babyface comeback. Like, literally the entire comeback in this match is, like, Riggs comes off the top with an axe handle.
Disco, good punch.
Disco does the bit... Yeah, he does the bit where he sidesteps and gut punches and then just hits a last dance.
Do you know,
which, again, I'm still annoyed it's not called the Chairbuster anymore.
Yeah, this goes last dance. It's always so awkward because he throws the boot with the left foot and then does the stunner with the right-hand side of his body.
Yeah,
and it's very awkward.
Again, it just goes to show that, like, as simple as the stunner seems, like, it's like a bad wrestler can even fuck a stunner up. You know what I mean? So that's the end of that. Then we get Master P flashback exclusively. We get to see a press conference. It's been a while since we've seen one of them. Now, I will say, right, I don't like the whole Master P and WCW thing because I have no nostalgia for Master P as a thing. I think we talked about that when he showed up first, that he wasn't really a thing over here.
Not at all that I recall.
Now, it seems like for a very short period of time, he had a very significant cultural impact in the States. So I get the nostalgia for him, but like, we're coming into this with completely fresh eyes. And I do think, Lee, I will give this to everybody involved. I think Master P is genuinely a fan. And I think he genuinely wants to try and like bring eyes to what he's doing.
I think it came out in the Nitro book. I don't think he was a fan per se growing up, but he is from New Orleans, legitimately. And obviously a strong wrestling presence in that city when he would have been growing up with Mid-South and stuff.
Yeah.
So, well, I have no doubt he had watched professional wrestling and was aware of professional wrestling.
I'll put it this way then. I stand corrected, but I will put it this way. He makes it come across like he isn't above wrestling.
He genuinely respects it. Yes.
Yes. And the other thing I will say is that WCW are making a huge deal out of this.
They're trying. Like,
and they should.
I have to say, both sides are trying.
Yes.
And look,
we will talk next week because we're going to a Knights of Nitro after this. And it's the Master P Nitro in New Orleans.
I think the most misguided part is they thought they could get Swole over.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the biggest flaws. Now, I know Master P doesn't really stick around much. But
neither does Swole, really.
I do know that, like, I know exactly where you're coming from with, of he's definitely interested because, like, the whole idea of Master P and the No Limit Soldiers was they were involved in everything. Like, look at the list that Tanae ran down last week. There was literally everything in the world he could possibly get the No Limit Soldiers involved in. He was there. So I have no doubt he wanted this to
Smart
be successful.
Guy. Yeah.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like, he doesn't want to attach his name to something that's less than. Mm-hmm. So he's going to try really hard, and he does try really hard. And I do think, like, on the Swole point, I will say I can see part of where it comes from, because, like, you don't want to make the thing that Master P is the wrestler.
Oh, no, not at all.
So you put in a guy that you think you can get to wrestle, but I would have picked anyone out of the power plant, or anyone already on the, like, again, you're already associating Conan and Ray with them.
That's
like,
enough.
That's good enough.
That's enough there. A hot WCW act. That's all that they need.
One of the best, like, you know, wrestlers of his generation, as we already mentioned
and
on
Ray,
the show. And like maybe one of the most over interviews.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's, like, he's not worth a fuck in the ring, but, like, Conan, his promos get huge reactions mm-hmm. every time.
And he was, like, deep into that culture. Like, he got it. He yep. understood it. Like, he could have been yep. the guy to carry that whole thing.
Yeah. He's one of those guys that, like, I think if they had listened to him more during this period, like, they could have really carved out that, you know, that, like, Latin American yeah. audience that WWE would spend the next 15-20 years chasing. They could have been theirs, like a mortal lock, if there had been like more emphasis on luchadors. Like, late
90s was like the time for Latin American superstars in America. Like pop culture.
Speaking of, while we're on the lads here, isn't it very funny that since our last podcast, the LWO are back?
Oh my God.
And are now joining the list with the brood of acts that we're all now pretending were around for a long time and over.
Like, how long on our run was the LWO? What, like 3 weeks maybe before Eddie's accident?
Yeah. Like, let's all remember, right? The LWO were, one, a parody of an act that was already in the company that was already tired and long past its sell-by date. And two, was basically just a holding pattern to keep the luchadors quiet. Like, to keep the cruiserweights doing something to shut them up.
They've been speaking up about not wrestling guys outside of the division.
Yeah. And they don't stick around for that long at all.
Yep.
And now, I don't doubt that in the hands of somebody competent, the LWO is a great idea and could have been a thing. But those great minds were not in WCW then, and they're not in WWE now.
No, they are not.
And I also think, and I don't know if this is a slightly controversial thing to say, Lee, so like, stop me if you disagree or tell me if you see where I'm coming from here. Much as there are a lot of the men's careers that are intertwined with each other, I feel the level to which WWE hammer you over the head with Eddie stuff when Ray is involved is not fair to Ray. Like the thing about, like, he's in the LWO now, which, like, famously, if you remember the LWO, either watching it or when we covered it, the whole thing was he didn't want to be in the LWO. Right, so there's that, but there's also the thing of, like, it was Eddie's group, and they're putting that on Ray now, and his whole Royal Rumble WrestleMania win of the title and stuff like that was all about Eddie. And when he came out, as much as it was a lovely moment in isolation, when he came out at WrestleMania, they played Eddie's music, and it's like, I feel like sometimes the overdoing of that
takes away from his own career.
Takes away from, like, it makes people think that he succeeds because Eddie.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean?
And
now look,
I think that's unfair. And like, Eddie's one of my favorites of all time, and so is Ray.
It doesn't help that, like, the Halloween Havoc 97 match is undoubtedly one of the best North American pay-per-view matches of all time. Undoubtedly.
But, like, I still remember, and it still feels fresh in my mind, that, like, Eddie dies at the end of 2005. Fucking tragic. One of the, like, the bleakest memories I ever have in wrestling. It was so fucking sad. But from that moment through probably the end of 2006, you could argue that Eddie Guerrero was the main character in WWE.
Yeah. Like, I wrote a preview for Voice of Wrestling for WrestleMania. And I said it in the preview. I said the most over person in the match between Dominic and Ray will be Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah. And, like, I love, I totally get it from Ray's point of view that, like, Eddie was one of, if not his best friends.
Like, literally, like, and the brothers.
He wants to keep the memory alive and stuff like that. But I guess I worry sometimes that there will be fans out there that, like, underrate
instead of looking at Rey Mysterio as a wrestler, they look at Rey Mysterio as Eddie Guerrero's friend.
Yeah. Now, I will say, it's not as, it doesn't feel as exploitive as 2006.
No,
the stuff they're doing with him recently.
And look,
like, that was genuinely, like, disgusting. And I think it won Observer Most Disgusting.
I think it did. And look, we know that
you had Orton doing the Eddie's in Hell promo, and, like, I think
he's not up there.
God,
he's down
did
there.
He RKO'd him on the lowrider, and, you know.
And look, we know that Vicky made the choice that they wanted to stay involved in the business, and
fuck, don't talk to
me. I'm not. And the family were, you know, all behind the whole idea of Ray using Eddie's name as a storyline device, shall we say?
Yeah.
And
I'm sure, again, Eddie, ever the worker, probably would have been fine with it himself.
And that's the thing. And that's what always comes back to. You have to remember, these guys are all workers. And if they think they're going to be able to help a friend in debt, they would probably all agree to it. And
but that again is not what we're saying. Do you know what I mean? Like, no. That's like, I'm not trying to defend Eddie on his behalf. And he's
not here. No, not at all. Like, not at all.
Yeah. I just think it's a thing where I think sometimes
it's laid on too thick.
I just worry that with a certain small percentage of people, Ray's legacy gets lost.
Yeah, 100. I agree.
But yeah, that's that. But how did we deviate from the press conference to that? So in the press conference, Conan was annoying the shit out of me because Eric Bischoff is trying to very sternly trying to read out Master P's accolades. But Conan, one, won't stop moving, and two, won't stop hitting the table. Like, he's rapping the table, mm-hmm. and like it's occluding the microphone. Like, you can't really hear what Bischoff is trying to say because he keeps like tapping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to do it. I was thinking about doing it to replicate it, and I was like, I wouldn't annoy people listening to this. Like, already when we hit the microphones accidentally, it's annoying enough for people, I'm sure. Yeah, fucking hell. Master P, I did love when he was doing his promo, completely blanked on Kurt Hennig's name. There's a moment where
I got involved with another wrestler.
I got involved with long pause another wrestler, which is good. He does seem to be delighted to be involved in wrestling, as we said. Rey Mysterio, the piss yellow sunglasses, not a great choice, mate. But they really are, like, and I'm sure it was a thing of the deal, like, they're really pushing the like positive mindset and mm-hmm. philosophy of the No Limit Soldiers. And it, like, it's weird for the time, a company that in short order would be repeatedly accused on a legal basis of institutional racism, being really progressive about Latino and hip hop culture in this one angle is kind of wild. It's mad how quickly things change, isn't it? We're then off to Nitro again, and it's Rey and Conan versus Psicosis and La Parca with the No Limit Soldiers in the corner. Conan and Rey hit their big moves and get the double pin. The No Limit Soldiers come in to celebrate, but the Rednecks hijack the sound system and play their song. And then the No Limit Soldiers chase them off. And Master P says, "You still want beef, cowboy? Because we're going to get rowdy." And the crowd don't react hugely to this, but I thought it was a clever device to get the No Limit Soldiers at the sound system to start playing their tunes mm-hmm. going into the break. So I thought that was like, they obviously reverse engineered. It's like, we want them to take over the tunes. How are we going to get there?
I thought the crowd didn't buy into it at all. Like, Master P is on the mic singing his Hootie Hoo, whatever song that is. And the fans weren't getting into it. And I thought Master P was getting slightly annoyed that the fans weren't buying into it.
Yeah, he repeats himself like two or three times. Yeah, poor guy. He is trying, like we
he
said.
He is trying.
Yeah, they're not having it. Next up, you want to talk about foreboding signs, Lee. The advertising, the closed captioning on this program is sponsored by America Online. Can't imagine WCW and AOL are ever going to come up together in conversation again. Anyway, our next match is Evan Courageous versus the returning Flatpak Sovereign. It's Prince Ikea. Tanae says, two of the young lions of WCW in this match. Prince Ikea has been around for fucking ages, man.
Yeah, at least like 97, if not 96.
Like, he may still be young, but he is not like a young lion in terms of like being a fresh, like, wet behind the ears. Like, he still wrestles like he's fresh, wet behind the ears rookie, but like,
he was TV champ.
This guy's been around for fucking yonks. Like, he's been killed three different times over since we started Thunder.
He's gone at least three long injury absences since we started the show.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, this match was just a total nutty.
This was one of those where, now you could tell that, right, so Courageous is fairly new on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And Ikea is like, he's the relative veteran, so he's leading the match. And you can tell this is a phenomenal misreading of what the room needed in this. Like, you should have, if I'm the veteran in there, I'm letting Courageous do all his dynamic, fast-paced stuff, bumping around from making him look like $1 million. But what we get is he's all action for a couple of seconds, and then we go through a break and Ikea has the heat and he grinds this match to a fucking halt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was so quiet. Like, so he gets a chin lock a few seconds after the break, and it is so quiet if you turned up the TV a little bit, you could probably hear individual people breathing in the crowd. You know?
Listen, I'm going to be watching the Masters all weekend. If I hear the crowd that quiet, I'll be disappointed.
Yeah. It was fucking shocking. And then Craig just goes outside the ring. IKEA, to slow down the pace even more, tries to do the thing where he's like stopping Courageous from getting back in the ring. And then they try to brawl around on the outside to get the crowd back, but they are just dead, dead, dead. Evan tries a comeback and he gets cut off. Prince whips him back in the ring. Shoulders in the corner. And just as you think, like, okay, things are starting to pick up again, he slaps on another shin lock. And everybody is so like gone at this point and out of the match that like Evan tries the like, and people like, I've heard people like react, like not superstar reaction, but people react to like the handsome young baby face Evan Courageous, and like he tries the valiant fight out of the chin lock and, you know, trying to wave to the crowd and get them going, and absolutely no response. And then Prince puts him down again. And like at this point I wrote down, like, I've never seen a WCW crowd react this little. This consistently across the show.
Wait till the artist arrives.
Yeah. Courageous tries a small package, gets kicked out. IKEA gets a bit of fireman's carry. Courageous slips out, rolls him up for the win, and hardly anyone even notices.
No. Yeah, that's exactly what I have. Nobody cared.
Now, what I will say is that at least the Milky Way replay showed what was the only good move of the match. Because like, as soon as the replay came up, I was like, what the fuck are they even going to show for this apart from the pin? And they did show that Evan Courageous, and I don't know if we've mentioned it on this show before, but he's definitely hit it in another match maybe too. He hits a lovely power slam.
He does.
He's got good snap. Now, it's not Orton levels of snap on a power slam, but Dustin Rhodes. But it's a fucking good-looking power slam. So, you know, fair play to him on that.
My biggest takeaway is I was reminded that the Milky Way in America is different to the Milky Way we have.
Yes, it is. How would you describe the Milky Way we have here? It's like the... like it's chocolate, but like the whole bar is just like the world's softest nougat.
Yeah, it's yeah, that's probably pretty accurate. Whereas there seems to be an actual chocolate bar.
Yeah. It seems to be closer to like, there's more chocolate involved. And also, if I remember from when I've had American Milky Ways on my travels there, the consistency is more akin to a Mars bar.
That's what I was going to say. Is it like Mars bar-esque? That's...
It feels like there's more bite to the American ones than they're like. It's like you're eating a cloud. The Milky Way is over here.
They're like a baby's chocolate bar over here.
They're pretty much one of the ones you give kids first because like they're so soft they can't fucking choke on them. Interesting. our next up is I'm now hungry. Tag team matchup next, and it's the First Family's Brian Knobbs and Hugh Morris with Jimmy Hart versus La Parca and Silver King. My little bit of giddiness that we were getting.
I was so excited when La Parca and Silver King came out.
And then these two fucks come out to wrestle them. I will say, you know, talk about signs of what we know is coming in terms of 1999 WCW. During the entrances here, Tanay makes mention of two things that are coming up. One is the Nitro Musical Summer, where they're going to have musical guests every week through the summer on Nitro, which is fairly infamous for several reasons we will get into. And also, guess who's re-signed? Dennis Rodman, who'll be having, I believe, his last match. Is it Road Wild this year?
I'm pretty sure it's Road Wild 99, yeah.
Has his final WCW match, which we will unfortunately be covering. So they're talking about the Steiners as well during the entrances. Larry very melodramatically says Sting could have literally been torn to shreds. I couldn't remember. I had already memory holed because it's been so many weeks since we did Great American Bash. The horrific dog mauling angle that happened on Great American Bash. Holy shit, it all came roaring back to me when he said literally torn to shreds. Yeah, that towel that was around, that was like 3 inches thick around his fist, really took a pounding from that probably toothless dog. I forgot I wrote this. This is how, I'm just going to read this sentence I wrote in my notes verbatim when this match started. This is how mad I was that Silver King was being wasted again. They brawl immediately because these two pasty fat dipshits can't do anything else.
It's an extremely harsh criticism of La Parca and Silver King.
Yeah, that's definitely what I was talking about.
Dave was anti-Mexican.
Oh my god!
Agenda again.
No, I'm not having this because I'm not having listeners either. Like, start to like go in on that joke with you, or I'm also not having, like, if somebody hasn't listened to us in a while, it's like, oh, I'm just going to listen to the latest episode. And, like, Lee's just like, oh, yeah, no, he hates luchadors. Yeah, it's like, no, you're not Russo-fying. I will not have it. I will not have it, sir.
I have to say, if there's one thing we have been pretty consistent on, it's that I am very much into the luchadors and you are not. And we have been begging for more Silver King and La Parca on the show.
We love both, particularly
Silver King. Is like an unsung hero to us. Of.
At least we know that like La Parca is featured fairly regularly through the end of WCW. Mm. But like Silver King is just like blink and you'll miss him. He shows up once every 3 months. Like, yeah. So, both luchadors come in. Morris ducks a La Parca clothesline, which takes out Silver King. Nobbs in, throwing shitty-looking punches at both men. So far, pretty much a squash for the first family, which I'm not happy about. God bless Silver King. There's a bit where the heels are beating on La Parca, and Silver King is trying his living fucking best on the apron to get this crowd mm-hmm. to react to anything, and it's just not happening. Jimmy starts distracting the ref, but completely forgot where he was supposed to stand to distract the ref. So he has to like run around he's up on the apron, then realizes he's in the wrong spot, drops down to the floor, runs around to distract him from another spot. Nobbs then hits La Parca with a chair, then Silver King in the back when he's running the ropes. Nobbs comes in now, hits a hideous pump handle
slam.
What
the fuck was he doing?
Yeah. Do you know what it was like, he was on the mat holding him like at WrestleMania, Becky Lynch doing the top rope slam, whereas like she was really gingerly doing it so as not to drop, was it Dakota or Bayley?
Bayley.
But like they were up on the ropes, not standing feet planted on the mat. And like Nobbs just like nearly lost him on it. And then he tags in, no laughing matter. And that's the win. This is followed up by a terrible promo into the camera, inviting anybody in the back to come walk down Nasty Boulevard and then get nasty sized. Just like, it's not happening, mate. And then Hugh Morris takes over, and just as he's about to deliver his punchline, where he's like something about how it's no laugh, it's something about how, oh, that they'll have the last laugh. Literally as he's about to say last laugh, they cut him off.
Rightly so.
They go to the this is a bad match.
That was awful. And of course you'll put the blame on Silver King and La Parca, but we all know the first family are DOA.
This is, I think, the third time they've tried to reform the first family, even just in our room.
Yeah, and I mean, the best...
It's never been good.
The best one was where Jimmy reunited Meng and Barbarian after they had just feuded 3 weeks previous. And then, of course, the Barbarian and Jimmy turned on Meng after 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Classic.
Great.
Classic.
Great first family lore.
But you know what? Speaking of the first family, if you didn't have enough of the first family... It's the main event already, sort of. It's Barbarian with Jimmy Hart versus Booker T in what is, I must remind you, a martial arts division title match. As Booker is our reigning mad champion.
I forgot.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's right. He beat Scott Steiner. Yeah.
And this is what I was like. This company hates Booker. This is his first match back. You need to go out for 11 minutes and pull something out of this guy.
That was
going to
be my takeaway. Like, why are you giving Booker, like, they've done a solid job of pushing, like, relatively pushing.
Yeah.
Why do you give him...
Big caveat there.
First of all, his big return on a tape thunder. And two, why are you putting him out there with
Barb? And do you know what? This isn't even the first time that Booker's return is on a thunder.
And that's fine. Like, look, you can get beyond that. But why are you putting him in there with Barb? You're not getting something out of Barb in 1999.
No. I would argue at any stage.
I've a soft spot for Barb. Barb could have a decent match at times.
Right, so. Booker gets the biggest reaction on the show by a mile, but it's still, like you had said earlier on, it's still muted. Yeah,
it's nowhere near the levels you would expect first.
Especially because if you think about it, like, no one says anything in the arena. So this is an unannounced return.
Mm-hmm.
Which should get a monster pop. Because he's very popular. But it doesn't, because they're dead. Maybe the most haunting sign I've seen in a long time in the crowd on the hard cam here. A large gentleman with a sign saying, WCW rocks my panties. Let that one fester.
Oh, if I did it again in the in the Patreon note I sent out earlier on, I got the year wrong on Backlash.
Oh my god, so did somebody jump to correct you?
Yeah, suit.
Good
It's not Backlash 08, it's Backlash 02.
How do you keep doing that?
I really need to write this shit down.
Yeah, or we're going to end up with another fucking Starcade situation.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, definitely don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, it's wild. Like, this is, I'd written this down. Like, it's wild how hard they're pushing the old guys versus the young guys so hard on this show. Because do you know what Penny dropped with me? It's like, this is such an unimaginative company, Lee. Because what are they doing a year from now?
Oh, it's I brought this up. Yeah, it's just like the early Millionaires Club versus New Blood.
Yeah, and at least this time I will say that the young guys are the baby faces, which is correct.
But how about this? The fact that they tried it the year previous and it didn't work.
And they do it again. I go, do you know what the problem was?
Yeah, it was the wrong dynamics.
Yeah. Oh, God. Booker got a flying start here. Barb is distressed and goes out to get instruction from Jimmy. Heat on Barb doesn't last long. Booker hits a hook kick. Barb bails again to confer with Jimmy, but Booker runs out, does a noggin knocker with the two of them. Booker is teeing off in the corner against Barb. Oi, oi. Whip reverse, but Booker gets a big boot up. Barb shakes it off and throws a German suplex. Booker fires up, sidewalk slam, spin-a-rooney and a sidekick. He starts to go for the axe kick, but Jimmy grabs his foot as he's coming off the ropes. Big boot causes Book to spill outside. Couple of pin attempts once he gets back in. Corner splash, a whip. Booker then, as Barb is charging into the corner, does his cool. He's done this before, where he like vaults out of the corner with a twisting roll up over Barb and wins. And again, almost no reaction to this.
Yeah, the flash pin wasn't the way you needed to bring Booker back. Get maybe if you want to try and establish it as a thing he does, that's fine. It's actually something that Booker does throughout his career, where he seems to use this for a couple of weeks on the spin and then just forgets about it again. Because I'm pretty sure he did it in WWE a couple of times as well. But yeah, just like I said, fucking not a good match to return on. I'm worried for where Booker is going. And
we know.
And the reactions that he's getting at this point. It's not going to get good for a little bit.
No, and like we've said it before, like imagine if you had maintained some of the momentum he had earlier in this year and just put the title on him some point this year.
Mm-hmm.
You would have made a star.
Mm-hmm.
An absolute star. The fact that he went on to have such a successful career in spite of what they would do to him for a lot of the death rattle era of this company is like testament to how good that guy was. But yeah, that ends. I don't know if you were like doing the calculations here, Lee, but I was like, the main event is over and I'm looking at my ticker here on the network and there's 34 minutes left on this program.
Long was left. I knew it was a long time, but I didn't like exactly time it.
I was flabbergasted because I immediately knew why. I was like, we're just going to be showing a whole bunch of Nitro from this point. And you know what, son of a bitch, that's what they did. So first we get a Nash versus Macho still image recap of their match at the pay-per-view. We cut to Nitro and Nash calls out Sid Vicious. Now, much to your point about how great Sid is, Sid cuts a great promo so backstage accepting the challenge. Good.
The camera's pointing it's up got, at him. It's fucking...
Yeah, it makes him look enormous. It makes him look scary. It's got all the Sid intensity. And rarely for him, it makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. He's like, yeah, I know Kevin Nash real well. I knew which buttons to push. Yeah. And now you've offered me a title match. I have you, big man.
Yeah, he's bragging that he knew that by... You know, getting into bed with Savage and doing that at the pay-per-view, he would get a shot at the title. So he's like, he's absolutely loving life.
He's playing
4D
chess here, yeah.
Yeah, cut to later, and Nash in a tie-dye NWO shirt.
I want it.
I don't remember the shirt at all.
I think it looks awesome.
Yeah, it's weird. He looks like fucking Van Hammer. He's getting beaten down by Sid and Savage. As Macho takes out Nick Patrick, Sting comes out to clear house, and... You remember when Sting comes out, this is what a crowd popping sounds like. I hadn't heard it all night.
I don't think Sting was actually coming out to save Nash. I think he was still just running from the dogs.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he actually looked great for a man who had Savaged, been as... Like, yeah. He torn to shreds, I think you'll find. Torn to shreds, you say.
It's amazing that his feud with the Steiners is now just over.
Yeah, that was just over. He got eaten by a dog. That's it. And this is where I notice Bischoff is just on commentary again. Then we go the next segment and the final segment of the show. This is like when you knew, and I tweet this out, this is how you know they were fucking phoning in that Thunder before the pay-per-view. Is that the final segment on this Thunder is an entire Nitro match with entrances.
Yeah. I don't think we need to go move by move through this match. It's a Nitro match. It's not a Thunder match.
So it's an 8-man match that pitches Flair, Piper, Paige, and Canyon versus the team I'm calling the Bizarro Radicals, Malenko, Benoit, Saturn, and Buff Bagwell.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what do you think of this?
We're right on the cusp of the revolution.
Yes. Yes, we are.
And Bagwell just does not fit with that aesthetic. Like, no. Even down to the point of Malenko, Saturn, and Benoit are all in their blue gear. And here you have Buff coming out in his red fucking Buff Bagwell. It's just like you can, subtle things like that.
You can tell it's starting to come together for them.
As a unit, yeah.
And Buff is just here also.
Yeah, and it's very much Buff is the guy the office wants to push.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. What did you think of this match? Because I thought this was like, it's not on the standard of, you know, like it's around this time that Raw starts getting the notorious habit for it. Like once it's a 6-man or higher, it's going to be good. It wasn't quite to that level, but I thought it was decent fun, all action.
Do you know what? I thought it was oddly coherent and decent enough wrestling. And I'd say they put the shine on the younger guys. And that's the most important part.
That's what I was going to say. In no small part, it's due to the fact that the centerpiece of this match, that the whole match was hung upon, was Chris Benoit.
And it's amazing. I did the exact same note of Benoit carried all of the work for his team when he probably didn't need to. But it's like the respect that basically the opposition team have for him meant that even when they were getting the heat on him, he was still getting the shine. I just think it's eye-opening when you see them in the ring together that WCW wanted to push Buff Bagwell, but Chris Benoit was right there.
Yeah. Do you know what actually staggered me is the finish of this match? So it was well done, but it all breaks down and everybody's outside and Buff takes a nasty spill on the apron to the floor. That the camera nearly completely missed. But then he comes back in, hits his blockbuster on Flair, and pins Flair clean. Which is, like, such a rarity. Like, a young guy pinning Ric Flair clean on television.
That's what I mean. They Buff was the guy they wanted to push as the next big babyface.
They did like a pretty decent job here. There was also, I would like to mention, a fairly fun spot where all four baby faces got heels and figure fours. And it was good because what that did was it distracted the ref away from Benoit because he was looking at the other three figure fours, and Bammer was able to come in and drop a leg on the legal team, Benoit.
Yeah. I think Benoit had it on Flair.
Yeah, so that made a good bit of sense as to how he managed to get in there. So I thought that was well thought out. But yeah, all action. So enjoyable, I thought.
Yeah, pretty decent for a Nitro match at that point.
Yeah, it was refreshing after that stinker of a Thunder. So yeah, that is the second ending to Thunder episode 67. We had the end of the actual Thunder portion. Now we have the end of the broadcast portion with the clean pin on Flair. Lee, who are your big winners and losers on Thunder episode 67? And yeah, your overall thoughts?
I wasn't aware coming in that it was the second part of a pre-pay-per-view taping. With that knowledge, now
makes a lot more sense.
I don't know that there was a winner on the show from any of the five matches that were actually Thunder matches. I'm going to say Buff Bagwell is the big winner because from the package early on the show to then the show ending with him. So, like, obviously they ended Nitro with Buff pinning Flair. They've ended Thunder with Buff pinning Flair. They're making a big deal of it. When, look, you might not like the direction, but they are trying with Buff. So
yeah, you might not like who they picked to pin Flair, but like they're going with it for at least.
So you got to give them credit there.
You do, in fact, got to hand it to them.
You don't got to hand it to ISIS, but you do, in fact, have to hand it to WCW here. Losers, I don't know. I think IKEA looked awful in his match. Scotty Riggs looked fucking terrible. Dobbs and Morris and Barb, just the first family in general, are fucking dead. I just no interest in them. And poor Booker. That's just poor Booker. I'm feeling that's going to be a real team going forward. Is man, poor Booker, poor guy.
The stuff he's been stuck with, yeah, for sure. Our finish counter, brought to you by Ludwig Borger, gives us 5 matches with 4 clean finishes and 1 interference leading directly to a finish. Thank you all so much for tuning back into the return of Days of Thunder. We shall see you again on the free feed in 2 weeks with a Knights of Nitro special. In the meantime, Lee, we're going to have 2 TRL specials behind the paywall at largemanappears.com. That's the series where if you pledge at the TRL tier on our Patreon, you get to request a show for us to watch. And what are the 2 that are coming up very soon? So
coming up in the next 7 days, we will have a special TRL Days of Thunder at the Movies episode where we will be watching Rumble in the Bronx, or will have watched and will be reviewing Rumble in the Bronx. And then secondly, this day next week, we will have the release of the next TRL episode, which is covering Backlash 02. Not away, Dave. Yeah. Backlash 02, which Sue has reminded me for the very reason of some mid-card NWO. So Sue was definitely not into the NWO B team in 1999. Otherwise, he would have got his feel of mid-card NWO.
So that's some good stuff. Also, we will have returning soon. I think we are fairly committed to it now. We did a TRL on it, but we are going to be doing a mini-series recapping the cult classic TV series WMAC Masters. We had such a blast doing the first 3 episodes that we will return very, very soon with our second batch of episodes on that. So all that and more for 5 Europeans over at largemanappears.com. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Days of Thunder. We shall see you again very soon. Thank you.
Thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder was produced by Lee Malone and edited by me, Dave Ryan. To keep up to date with the show and find all the ways to listen to us, you can follow us on Twitter at WCW Thunderpod or click the Linktree link in our Twitter bio or in the show notes. I am at The Day to Dave on Twitter and Lee is at Malone_713. Days of Thunder is a part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Follow the VOW network anywhere good podcasts are sold for more fine podcasts than you can shake a stick at. Thanks. A candle casting a faint glow.
Hello there, my name's Neil David, and I'm the host of Eurograps Express, the podcast exclusively dedicated to the wrestling of Europe. If it's wrestling, and it happens in Europe, and it's good, we talk about it. Whether it's RevPro, Progress, WXW, Passion Pro, Pro Wrestling Chaos, Pro Wrestling North, we don't care, we talk about them all. If it's good and it's exciting, I want to share it with you. We're on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Check us out on the feed. Check us out on Twitter at EurograpsEXP. And join us for chat about European wrestling and a little bit of chat about cheese. Hopefully see you there.